Episode 183 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded May 17th, 2018. Upfronts and HBO. Les, it's just you and me today.
What?
Yeah.
No one else. Man, in I thought the we studio. Were waiting on somebody interesting to come in.
No.
Nobody?
No interesting people on this
episode.
All right.
Well, it's just us then.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
We're going to have to hold down the fort. And by that, I mean you're going to have to hold down the fort because I'm also sick. So I might be coughing over here. I had a fever all day today.
That's right. I'm splayed out like Twister. I got like hands and feet on the corners of the fort.
You're good.
Yeah, we're set.
You got this. You're going to hold it together. Folks, we are talking about some HBO shows that wrapped up. Barry wrapped up, as well as Silicon Valley, and we're also on the fourth episode of Westworld. So we're talking about HBO this week.
For just a second, I honestly thought you were about to say, and Westworld's just wrapped up on its quarter season break, and I was just going to have to nod and go, that's probably a thing we're doing now. We're probably doing quarter season.
They're only doing, yeah, just
like,
quarter
season. Four episodes, we're going to wait 6 months.
I didn't even know that Barry and Silicon Valley were going to wrap up in eight.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know Barry had wrapped. I'm behind on it, and Silicon Valley, I did the same thing when I saw it was the season finale, and I went, what the fuck?
I was like, you guys are really going big on this episode eight. You still got two more at least, right? No, you don't. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it. But folks, guess what? It is also time for Upfronts.
Yes, this is the fancy word for a bunch of commercials in a row.
Yes. Upfronts is when all the networks get to preview some of the shows that they've made poor decisions to go ahead and finance.
So I had never like just Googled for upfronts before, separate from like, I mean, you see commercials however you see commercials, but in the last 10 years of all our lives, like we've all had these moments where you realize, shit, I haven't seen a commercial in a long time. I pay $2 extra for whatever.
Yeah.
So then you go seek out trailers basically for these things. If you search for upfronts though, there's a slightly different editing style to these things sometimes, and it ends up looking like a super cut, like long form commercial that tells
you
way too much about the show.
It's like 3 minutes and I'm like, I can't handle this.
And they really feel like the fake, like you see where people get the format and the feel for making fake shows out of like Forgetting Sarah Marshall and I think about movies where they have like completely fake bullshit cop shows and stuff. And so, like we were talking earlier, when I watch through a bunch of upfronts, I end up just skipping the ones that sound like an auto-generated like mission state, like a joke.
Yeah, that's a good call. I mean, I think I watched all except for one of them, which I just read the synopsis and I was like, fuck that, and I skipped it.
There's a show on Netflix called The Sniffer, and I paused and watched the trailer for it because it's a real thing. There's like a season or two of this, and it is straight up. It's like it's a joke show. I know I've seen it as a joke on another show. It's a guy that can like smell things like preternaturally well, and so like he's like the mentalist or psych or whatever, but for smells.
But he smells stuff.
Yeah, like he solves who dealt it.
Oh no!
I saw the show. I was like, oh, fuck, that can't be real. And that's how I feel about a third of the upfronts, all of CBS's upfronts, and about a third of everyone else's.
Well, we'll do a quick run through in a bit with that after we do our plugs and our news. First off, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Les.
And we want to say that we are proud members of the Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater
Network. This is our new name for our network. We're no longer part of Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
We're Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater.
I like the logo.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Mike does a great job with all this stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, I dig the logo. And
I actually want a sweater with that logo on.
Yes. Yeah, it does. It looks like some kind of Captain Marvel type merchandise that like your grandmother homemade for you.
Right? Mike, make us some sweaters. It's such a good name, too. Electric Sweater. It just feels like, cozy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are proud members of that, and you guys can go check out all the other shows that are on the network. We deal primarily in TV podcasting, so you can go check out Key and Clyde talking about This Is Us, and they also do pilot watching. You can go over and check out Femme TV with Melissa Garamonti.
Yep.
You can go check out the Mr. Robot O podcast that Mike does with Melissa and Ghost.
Yes. Now, have you seen Rami Malek, is that the kid from Mr. Robot?
Yeah.
He's about to do the Queen biopic.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Like,
the trailer looked awesome. Yeah. I heard that they're not going to touch on the AIDS epidemic, though, at all, which seems like,
seems like a weird part to leave out.
Yeah.
Well, but
okay.
Yeah. For me, I sat through the trailer thinking, like, it's like Joaquin Phoenix. Like, you don't exactly look like the guy you're playing, but you look weird in a way that's working.
Yeah. It's okay for me.
Yeah.
I saw it, that. And I'm like, all right. It's hard for me to divorce that guy from the Asperger's character. He plays Mr. Robot.
Any previous role, whenever I go back and go, oh my God, he's in this. And he's Mr. Robot every time. And I can't see him
at a night at the museum as like the Pharaoh or whatever. I'm like, fuck off. You're Mr. Robot.
Oh shit, that's right. That's where it first happened for me, where I was like, no, fuck you.
Les has a show on our network as well.
The Good Die Young. Working on getting season 2 together for that.
Awesome. Awesome. So, ton of podcasts. Go check it out. ElectricSweater.com.
Electric Sweater.
And we are also on Patreon, guys. If you go to TVDudes.com or Patreon.com/TVDudes, there you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a buck or two an episode, and we really appreciate it. It helps keep us going. And in exchange, we do bonus exclusive content. We will talk about, we talked about Infinity War for the past 2 weeks, in fact.
Yes.
But we'll talk about stuff that doesn't fall under the umbrella of television for you guys, and we try and do that just as a little exclusive stuff to say thank you for all of you guys who are helping support our show. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. All right, let's get into the news. So there is some interesting stuff that's been going on surrounding the upfronts. What seems to coincide with the upfronts is a bunch of cancellations on TV.
Yes. Well, you got to make room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one of the big ones that was surprising was Brooklyn Nine-Nine over on Fox. The Mick also got canceled, as well as, I don't even remember what the other show was.
I'm never sure what the ratings are anymore on things. Sometimes
the Mick got canceled, and that one's great.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed The Mick, but it didn't shock me that The Mick got canceled. I mean, I feel like unless sitcoms make a splash that is just undeniable, where you can't get away from Seinfeld, or you can't get away from, and even then, I don't think Seinfeld would have survived to get to that point.
Right.
But the Mick didn't shock me. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is not a show that I consistently watched. I think
a lot of people felt that way.
Yep. But I feel like I'm the only person on the planet who actively didn't think Sandberg was funny.
Oh.
Coming out of SNL, and so when they announced that he had a TV show, I didn't care.
Well, he was annoying.
Yeah.
I think it took
a long time for me to understand how good the rest of the cast on Brooklyn was.
Yeah, and he was pretty instrumental in all of the SNL shorts and the Lonely Island stuff that they would create. So he himself can be a bit, like, much to take in his comedy style, but he clearly has great comedic vision for all of the other stuff they work on.
I've since come to appreciate him a lot more, and I like the show. I'm glad to see it keep going. But it was one of those where I just stayed off Twitter for a couple of days of, like, rather than chime in, so should I have been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Well, it got canceled on Fox, and like 30 hours later it got picked up by NBC.
Yeah,
so NBC's gonna have Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and that's interesting because they also have The Good Place, and yes, Mike Schur is producing both of these.
Yes. And he has a third show he's about to do, Abby's.
You do too much, Mike Schur.
No, do half of NBC's programming, because they don't have anything else.
Well, they seem to be getting a little bit better, NBC. Like, I heard that they're no longer in last place, and The Voice is, like, really, like, or is it The Four? I don't even know what they do now. One of those, The Voice or The Four, is, like, now, like, budget, like, handling the budget for them, and so they're good to go there. But, yeah, it's cool that they grabbed this show. And it gets to have a sixth season over on NBC. I hope we see some crossovers between The good Place and this, and maybe Abby's even. Netflix might also resurrect Designated Survivor, which got canceled over at ABC.
That seems weird. I mean, I realize sometimes we get to talking about TV or somebody brings up like five shows in a row that I'm like, fuck, are those all on? I don't watch any of those.
Yeah.
Given the amount of TV we watch, but who the fuck was, I mean, Designated Survivor, I just don't, maybe I don't work in an office with a water cooler anymore, so nobody talks about this, but who the hell was watching this?
I mean, old people.
Old people.
Old people were watching
that. Are they streaming Netflix?
I don't know if it's going to have a good audience if it switched over there.
My folks still get DVDs mailed to them.
Oh, man.
So maybe there'll be a season of Designated Survivor that'll be on a 4-disc set next year.
What is a DVD?
Yeah.
Right? The Expanse is another one that is on the ropes. They canceled it over at Sci-Fi.
I thought it was dead. Is it on the... Are they maybe going to bring it back, maybe?
Well, there's a bunch of fan petitions for it to be picked up by Amazon, by Netflix. I'm also seeing like a bunch of nerdy celebrities on Twitter like starting to rally around this. You got the Mythbusters guys, and you got Katie Mack and some other people.
Expanse is a show that I've liked what I've seen. I've also let myself get way behind on it because it was difficult for me to watch, not having cable.
Yeah.
Every friend of mine that pines for like hard sci-fi loves the shit out of this show.
It seems like it's really expensive, though, too.
Yeah. I know a lot of other people who think it's like a snooze fest, which I suppose is why we probably don't have more hard sci-fi on television.
Right.
I want to see this live just because I know there's a particular niche market that puts in the hours watching every goddamn sci-fi thing that comes out, and I feel like this is their fucking reward show. Finish making it.
You guys probably only need another season to wrap things up.
Yeah, at the very least, don't pull the rug out from under it. Like, give it back for a season somewhere and wrap it.
I imagine even if it gets canceled now, it'll be resurrected in a couple of years kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It would be better to grab it now while all the actors are still on
exactly,
board.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Am I going to get my Deadwood movie?
No.
No.
Speaking of resurrected shows, Arrested Development season 5 will be here in like a week.
Have you watched any of the recut of 4?
I'm loving it.
Yeah.
It's so much better.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mind season 4, but I got what people talked about. It did not feel like
it
the
felt
same
disjointed,
structure.
Right?
Yeah. And it was because they couldn't get everybody back at the same times, like we were just saying.
But also, it seemed like Hurwitz had this vision for like, oh, we can do like an episode by a character study in each episode.
Yeah. There was some interview with him about the recut that the impact they thought it was going to have just isn't what came through. Yeah. And that, but yeah, watching it, it's bizarre.
Oh, they thought it was going to be bigger, the recut?
Or that they just, they thought that piling up each character, that by the end of it, you'd have that feeling that they were wanting to get of everything kind of coming together.
It just didn't coalesce
like that for people.
Yeah, bummer. But the season 5 will be out pretty soon, and it's going to be split in half, so they're going to do like 8 episodes here, 8 episodes there, or whatever.
Yeah, that's probably fine.
Yeah, whatever. I'm going to binge it anyway.
Yeah.
We can skip this next bit of news. How about, let's just jump into the upfronts. Let's do it. All right, upfronts, guys.
Was there nothing on there about iZombie surviving?
No, did it?
Yes.
iZombie survived.
iZombie survived. I feel like is got to be the lowest rated show. Maybe no. Life Sentence.
How is
killed.
That the people at the top just have to be big fans?
That's all I can think. And they're giving it one more season. Mm. I mean, it's not an indefinite survival, but I love that they seem to be basically like, nope, here's one more rapid.
There's a couple of shows.
Same with Crazy X.
CW
is doing the exact same with Crazy X. They have they got an official fourth season, which Crazy X was pitched as a 4-season show, and so. They're getting to do their full, what they planned.
That's pretty rad. The other one I was going to skip was this story about Gotham. They're trying to do a prequel series.
Oh, man.
About Alfred Pennyworth when he was younger. And like when the Wayne's parents.
I keep Wayne hearing parents. People tell me that Gotham has somehow arced up and gotten better or something like that. And
I think it's just more soap opera schlocky.
I think they're fucking with me like S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, it just... No, it hasn't. No, yeah. It can't have.
This sounds terrible, this show.
Yeah, don't do that.
All right, upfronts, guys. So, we're going to start with... Pick a network. Which one you want?
Let's start with ABC.
ABC. All right, ABC actually had the most trailers of any of the networks. So, I guess they're really trying to put a bunch of things in there. First up... Pretty Little Liars, The Perfectionists. They're making a spin-off series about... Did you ever watch Pretty Little Liars?
I've seen a few episodes of this, but I honestly did not know that it was on ABC. I thought it was on... It seems like a CW-ish kind of trash.
Yeah, but it also seems kind of like that...
Like
that
I don't mean trash like a shitty show. I just mean lurid, like backstabbing...
ABC Family,
devious,
freeform kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's... No. It's over there. I never watched the original. I have no interest in this show.
Maybe it was ABC Family. It was on a Freeform. That's how it's on. I don't know. Who knows?
So the ABC has, you know, the Goldbergs. They have Fresh Off the Boat. They have Blackish. So they have a good lineup of comedies right now. Then they also have that garbage called Roseanne. It's on ABC, right?
That seems plausible.
Anyway, they have this new show called The Kids Are All Right, which is by Tim Doyle, the guy who did like Last Man Standing, and I feel like he worked on Andy Richter versus the Universe, some different shows like that.
Yeah, ABC is just Roseanne.
So there's this show, which is basically a 70s version of The Goldbergs, but with like a Catholic family.
Okay.
So there's eight boys living in this family, and the middle child is talking about like his crazy life growing up when this family in the 70s. It kind of also reminds me of like F is for Family.
Yeah, okay.
That animated one that was over on Netflix. I don't know.
Is that based around Bill Burr?
Yeah, the F is for Family one. The kids are all right.
So something between Goldbergs and Wonder Years?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
A little bit more probably raunchier humor than the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
But probably in line with Goldbergs.
The shows just aren't for me. If I watch an episode of it, it's probably cute. But like all of those shows, I don't know that I've seen one complete episode of any of Blackish or Goldbergs or
Fresh Off the Boat.
Fresh Off the Boat.
Like, yeah.
I mean, I don't doubt that they are great for what they are. That just, it's weird that they're aiming that sitcom at a thing I don't care about. Just, it's a type of sitcom I don't care about.
Yeah. This is not my, I don't want a wholesome family comedy, I guess.
Even when they get kind of raunchy, like, it's weird. The ones that I love, it's off pure nostalgia. Like, I don't give a shit about, like, a new Captain Crunch cereal coming out, but I'm cool with Crunch Berries because I had them when I was a kid.
Right.
I don't really want another 70s show. I'm good on that.
Yeah, I watch,
I will watch 70s shows reruns, but I don't give a fuck about this.
Yeah, I'll watch Malcolm in the Middle. I don't need these ones,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
So, The Fix is a legal drama, and I feel like that's where I could have just stopped.
This looks more like more of a story than The Rookie, though.
Yeah.
Where at least this has it still felt like they could have put this together from computer assimilating bits of a spreadsheet. Like it's
Robin
Tunney, who you've seen her play a cop. The premise of this show is that she's returning to a case that she couldn't solve, but the way they did the trailer, and I've seen her as a cop, and I really couldn't figure out if this was supposed to be a sequel to a show I've seen her in, of like, you liked her in The Mentalist, and now watch as she catches the guy whose name you can't remember from Oz. And
it's Adewale I'm not going to say it right.
Yeah. Was he Mr.
He's
Echo?
Adebisi. Yeah, he knew it was Mr. Echo. He's Adebisi from Oz and Mr. Echo.
And, I mean, it doesn't look bad. Sometimes these cop shows or procedurals like this can really catch me off guard and grab me. But, I don't know, the female following or I guess really what this looks to be is like, will they, won't they? I mean, not will they, won't they, but is she pursuing him because she's sure he did it? But this is a new murder, and so did he do it, or is she just leaning on him?
She had this terrible trial and she failed, but now he may have committed another crime, so she's brought back in with her old evidence.
Yeah,
and
because like her vendetta against you from the previous thing won't get this new trial thrown out.
This is like produced or in some part associated with Marcia Clark, from the O.J. Simpson stuff. So I don't know if this is like her fantasy of taking down O.J.
Okay, in that sense, this still looks terrible, but I hope it makes a fuckload of money or whatever, because I came out of all the previous years' stuff about the O.J. Simpson trial feeling really bad for Marcia Clark.
Oh, yeah. She got shit on. Like, her and Lewinsky.
If this makes her a couple dimes, that's great.
Yeah. Whiskey Cavalier is a buddy cop action show that has an FBI agent and a CIA agent team up, but they also happen to be a divorced couple. So it's Lauren Cohen and Scott Foley, and they're going to
fight crime together. Sounds like I should put a letter opener through my eye. This is awful.
It's awful.
What I love is the idea of this: an FBI agent and a CIA agent teaming up and then discovering that neither of them can do anything in any jurisdiction. Like, let's go over here. No, I can't do anything in that room. Like, well, then we'll go over here. No, that's domestic. I'm CIA.
That's perfect. Yeah, this looks bad to me, and I don't really get the appeal. It looks like it's trying to, I guess, capitalize maybe off of The Blacklist or something. I don't know.
Well, so many of these shows feel like they are purely like, let's just relaunch it and slot in new people and try it again.
Yeah,
because I've seen this show five fucking times. I think Michael Whaley was in the most recent iteration of He's OCD and keeps his desk clean. He's a wild cop.
Okay, this next one's called Grand Hotel, and it's got Demian Bashir in it from, like, The Bridge, and I don't know. You've seen him in some other stuff. But this is just, like, some rich Miami family living in, like, a penthouse hotel and how they manage it and all the drama. It's like Dallas or some shit. I don't care.
So it just seems like the same reason I gave the middle finger to Dynasty. Like, I just don't want to watch this.
It's just a bunch of rich people and bullshit drama that I don't really identify with, and it's like a reason for all of them to shoot in Miami and have a great time while they're shooting, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I've got episodes of Magic City I haven't watched. I'll just go watch that.
Yeah. Single Parents. Brad Garrett is on another show. He's on a new show every single season, I believe. He's always popping up in something.
It's like Kyle Bornheimer. Like,
yeah.
He's
the other Kyle Bornheimer.
Good, but the show's not going to survive.
So this one is Single Parents, is about all these single parents that take their kids to school, and then they try to avoid any sort of responsibility. And Taron Killam, is that his name? The good dude from SNL.
SNL?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's kind of the lead in this show. He's a single parent who's also a teacher at the school, and he's like super ambitious, and he's trying to make all the other single parents like get involved and do stuff. So I guess it's just revolving around how all of them interact. It's supposed to be kind of comedic.
Yeah.
I might say this was the most interesting of ABC's shows to me.
Is it more fun to watch these with kids? Like, if you have kids?
That I have kids? No, I don't care. I mean, they're saying stuff about like being a parent, and I can't identify with the single parent experience. But
yeah. It seems like, I always wonder if I just don't get these because I don't have kids and I don't like being around kids and I don't really want to watch kids on TV.
Right.
But then when I talk to my friends that have kids and they're like, no, at the end of the day, I don't really want to watch somebody else like, womp, womp, my, you know, like, I just fought a kid in the bath. I don't want to sit and watch you joke about it. Fuck you.
Yeah. Like, I don't get the appeal. So, Single Parents. That one gets my most interesting of ABC lineup.
These are probably all going to get 5 seasons.
There's this other show called A Million Little Things, which is about, like, all these... Go ahead.
I thought for a minute when I first saw this, this is going to be an adaptation of the infamous James Frey book.
A Million Little Pieces.
And right, I was right. Like, fuck yeah, do it. Do it. But
nope.
No.
A Million Little Things is, like, these 5 or 6 best friends who are all going through their midlife crisis. They're all miserable now, and they are all brought back together while they're at their lowest moment because one of their friends commits suicide, and like another friend is suicidal, another friend is just found out he had cancer, another one's going through a divorce, and it's just like, ugh, sappy bullshit.
Like 13 Reasons Why Meets Grown-Ups?
It's just sappy, emotionally manipulative bullshit. It's This Is Us, or there's a couple other shows that this kind of reminded me of where it's like,
yeah,
these friends that all like have to get back together. Wasn't there that Netflix show that had just a couple episodes and it was about like all these friends that meet up once a year and like some of them are cheating on each other or whatever. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah. This is the Big Chill setup kind of basically.
I never saw it.
Yeah. They show up to a friend's suicide funeral or OD, arguably suicide. And yeah. And they're all going through their lives and
sappy. The last one from ABC is The Rookie, which we mentioned briefly. Nathan Fillion is back as a 40-year-old cop. That dude's 50, but he's playing a 40-year-old cop.
Yeah. I love Nathan Fillion. Dude is just charming. That said, the odds that this show is more than just formulaic shit is like near zero.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, he's...
It's going to be the shield light or something.
Yeah, he's going through a divorce, or he's just been divorced. His life is, like, at bottom for him, and he is inadvertently in a bank robbery. He's just in the bank when it gets robbed.
And he feels like he acted heroic during
it. Like, he stands up to the dude, yeah. I did like that at least they don't... It doesn't seem like he saves the fucking day. He just stands up for a minute.
And he got a rush from it.
And, yeah. And another lady comes up and says, you were so brave. So then it seems like he moves cross-country and shaves. But I don't know, and shows up in LA and joins like the worst reputation police department in the country
He's going to shake things up because he's got a 40-year-old good-hearted perspective.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, because what the LAPD really needed was just like a Midwestern white dude's perspective to friendly it all up. And he deals with like crazy people in the streets and the other cops don't like him. And good luck in 2018 making something super special out of a show that seems designed to humanize the LAPD. Best of luck with that.
Right, right. My thing with Nathan Fillion is I have this geek expectation that he's going to reclaim this glory of Serenity, of Dr. Horrible, that he is that person who always wants those projects. But no, that's not honest. He's the guy who did Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who did...
Granted, I've seen a shitload of that show, but... Yeah.
Well, not Bones, but the other one that might as well be Bones. Castle.
Yeah, Castle. Honestly, yeah. I figured The Rookie was going to be another Castle iteration.
This guy just cashes in on big network projects. Yeah. And, you know, cheers to him. But
he seems like a nerd that also has a career and has a clear idea of wanting a legit career. And not, but yeah, there's a part of me that deep down wishes that Nathan Fillion would just like wait for Stargate iterations or something. And you know, like, I mean, granted, that would put him on a lot of genre shows I probably don't want to watch otherwise, but right now he's on a lot of non-genre shows I don't want to watch.
And he's getting paid though. So
yep.
Can't argue there. All right, let's spin the wheel. What's the next network?
What's coming up on Fox? They cleared some room.
Fox. Okay. So this first one.
We've got at least an hour and a half to fill, right?
There's a show called Rel, and it features this comedian, something Rel. I don't even remember the dude's name. I should pull it up and look it up.
I read something about this, and I'm not remembering it because if I remember correctly, it was that boring.
Yeah. It's this comedian. I'm going to scroll down here and find his full name. Anyway, he is going through life post-divorce, you know, once again, this sad, tired trope that all these guys are getting divorced. The comedian's name is Lil Rel Howery. And the comedy follows a man's life after he finds out his wife is having an affair with a barber. And so now he's a single father in Chicago, and his dad is Sinbad.
Okay.
And it looks not funny because it's a multicam sitcom.
Yeah, his dad was Sinbad is why I just zoned out. But this dude is the brother from the Carmichael show, and I loved him on that.
Yeah.
And it's got, I think, Gerard Carmichael.
He's producing.
Is producing it. But if that's the guy, was he the TSA agent friend in Get Out?
I think so, yeah.
All right. That.
He's funny.
That's more promising. I understand why they led with Sinbad in the opening sentence description that I read, but
I can't do laugh tracks. As soon as
oh
I see
God,
him,
yeah.
I just,
no.
I'm like, nope, fuck that show.
I feel the same way about, we'll discuss Cool Kids later.
Oh, let's discuss it right now.
Okay, because David Alan Greer was the least funny part for me of the Carmichael show, and that the Carmichael show is gone, and I instead just get him. I mean, is it progress that the dad saying the shit is not just Tim Allen or Shatner?
So The Cool Kids is a multicam comedy by Charlie Day, which is kind of interesting. But it's about a couple of old dudes, David Alan Greer, Martin Mull, who you would recognize.
Yeah, I love Martin Mull.
And Leslie Jordan, who I haven't seen in years,
yeah.
Decades.
I didn't get any vibe of Charlie Day's involvement at all off this trailer for me. I don't know. This just didn't look that.
But there are a bunch of 70-year-old people living in an old folks' home that go on wacky adventures. It's like the Golden Girls, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was just old people that are friends, and I don't know.
Yeah, they're the snobby about being old guys.
Like men of a certain age, but even older.
Yes, yeah, men of an older age. Nothing about the jokes on that commercial for this looked special.
No.
I mean, it was all like, you sure you ought to be mixing those pills with alcohol? You know what happens when you mix those pills with alcohol? A good time.
It's an empty joke.
Like, that's straight up an actual joke from that commercial.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nothing about that Scream Charlie Day's involvement for me. I'm going to forget he's part of it.
There's this show I'm just going to go ahead and mention real quick. There's one called Proven Innocent, which is just a legal drama that they try to prove people's innocence. We can just skip it.
I'm
right
picturing
there.
Like four or five young people's heads in a sepia tone with like a scale of justice and maybe some kind of column building in the background.
Nailed it. Yeah. You nailed it. I don't even. Oh, Vincent Kartheiser is in it. So that's the only other
person
yeah. I recognize.
So he'll be slimy.
Yeah. And then The Passage is the genre show that's coming out from Fox. This one is kind of peculiar because it's like The Last of Us, but with like vampire people yeah. instead of like people turning into spores.
I kind of like the setup of this because it takes off of something I've seen in other vampire movies that I've always liked as a twist on it. This idea that vampirism is an inadvertent side effect of trying to cure other diseases.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think the premise for this is that we've been experimenting on death row inmates, and we've inadvertently created an incredibly contagious strain of vampirism
yeah.
in death row inmates in an attempt to cure people. But somehow Zach Morris is involved.
Yeah. It looks like they have decided what they need to do is get a young girl to have this virus and a young child, and this one specifically chosen child might be able to house the virus and defeat it because she's so young. And it's a crazy theory. They're going to go ahead and try it out, these evil scientists that want to kidnap her. So they send Mark Paul Gosselaar, Zach Morris, out as one of their agents to go get her. And he has a change of heart eventually. And so he and the little girl go on the run from a people who have vampires on their payroll.
Honestly, this just sounds like such a like balls out crazy potential clusterfuck that I will watch a couple episodes.
It seems the most interesting easily by Fox.
Like, I'm not saying that it's going to be good, but it seems like a swing for a fence.
So, I mean, the weirdest thing is that Fox canceled The Mick, they canceled Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then they put in two multicam sitcoms in its place. Like, Fox used to at least kind of have a good edge with some comedy there, and they yeah. got rid of it. I don't understand what's going on.
I feel like
on.
They seeded a whole genre.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like they bailed on sitcoms.
And they gave it over to NBC, who's
yeah.
now easily going to dominate.
I really enjoyed The Mick. I'm sad it's gone.
Yeah.
Fox also dropped Lucifer.
Oh, is that the other one?
Yeah, which I forgot was still on, which is probably why it's gone.
Yeah, no love lost there. They took an interesting comic book, and then they made it a cheesy procedural.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't mind it as a procedural, but it was so not what I wanted from that comic.
NBC, speaking of which, has a couple shows. We already mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine is saved. There's this show called New Amsterdam, which is about...
There was already a fucking show called New Amsterdam.
Was there?
Yeah.
Well, there's a new one. This is about a guy who's brought into a hospital to shake things up, and he's going to fire who needs to be fired and make it so that people put patients first instead of billing first. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because all those other evil doctors were just about only billing. No, yeah. I think most people are still like, oh, you got to make ends meet because saving people costs money. But this is just, I don't know. It seemed like it was trying to vilify the medical community for something that's a little bit beyond the medical community's control.
Yeah. The show I was thinking of when I saw this first is 10 years ago, there was a show called New Amsterdam about an immortal cop.
Oh, yeah.
And it was called New Amsterdam because he'd been a cop in New York City that long.
Okay, like that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it lasted, I don't know, a season. Yeah, maybe.
Well, I guess they were able to take the name.
I think it died from the writer's strike.
I Feel Bad is a comedy from Amy Poehler's, she's producing. And this stars Soraya Blue as, I don't know, she's like a career woman and a mom just trying to juggle coming that certain age where she gets confused for her mom and her parents live at the house and her dad maybe, grabs her butt. And
maybe this will end up being the next mini project and end up something really special.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It didn't have a laugh track, so that's a point in its favor.
You have the confidence of not feeling like you need to actually cue me to laugh.
The last one from NBC is one called Manifest.
I heard.
Did you see this?
No, I did not see the commercial for this. This is the one you said was season 4 of Lost.
Season 4 of Lost. So basically what happens is a bunch of people get on a flight, and the flight disappears for 5 years and then lands in the future. It's like Flight of the Navigator or something weird like that. So 5 years later, it lands where it's supposed to land, and people are like, where the fuck were you? You guys are supposed to be here, and everything's changed, and you were in a relationship with this person, but they moved on and got married to someone else, and technology's advanced so that we can actually cure your kid of the leukemia strain that he has. And, you know,
it's been an important 5 years here.
Yeah. So they're starting to figure out, like, that some crazy stuff happened in the 5 years, and it affects all these passengers, and that there might be, you know, in addition to the 5 year jump from the plane, there might be other mysterious things in the mix. So it's a little bit supernatural, a little bit saccharine, feel good kind of stuff.
I'll watch at least half a season of this.
Yeah. I'll watch an episode and see if
This will have to be egregiously bad for me to not make it through three of it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's jump over to CBS then. CBS has a show called God Friended Me. So this is about an ardent atheist podcaster. He's just so atheist, guys. Man, he does not like religion. He's so atheist, and he just rails against it in a podcast. But then all of a sudden, on his phone, God Facebook friends him. And he's like, hey, get out of here, God. What's going on with this weird account that keeps Facebook friending me? But then finally he accepts it, and then God starts making him be friends with other people and on Facebook, and as soon as he accepts a friend request from that person, he bumps into them on the street, and then he realizes he has to save their life, and God is now speaking to him through Facebook to save people's lives and interact with them. So it's kind of like Persons of Interest if the machine was God, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, it's, my God.
I watched it, and it made me angry. I was like, fuck this show.
Man, this sounds
what
like...
What convoluted... If you're God... Just fucking save people. Don't do some convoluted Facebook messaging thing to save this guy to make him save people.
I really love the idea that, like, you might be praying to God, but the algorithm is preventing it from popping up top in his newsfeed.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's just missing important shit. Like, right now, the volcano's going off in Hawaii, but the algorithm is showing God, like, some political bullshit or something. And, you know, like, I don't want to find out what...
I want a scene where God actually makes him like God's post a couple times. And if he gets enough likes, then God cures that kid of cancer.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So, like, what do you think God does on Facebook when he gets the, like, you know, like or
call
share?
Call to action.
Yeah,
shit.
Call to action shit. Oh, this is a fucking terrible idea.
It just seemed pretty offensive.
This seems like the kind of show that should have to jump networks to a channel that shares time with the Hallmark Channel.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like PAX or something. Like, this should run at like 6 a.m.
700 Club shows.
Yes.
FBI is the name of a new Dick Wolf show. I don't feel like I need to elaborate much on that. It's just another Dick Wolf show.
Yeah. You said, yeah.
It's called FBI, so it's just going to follow some FBI characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's Dick Wolf. If you're in the mood to watch an episode of Law & Order, there's like 13 different iterations with 100 episodes each.
Right.
Any of them are the same.
He's just loaded, I'm sure. Murphy Brown is making a comeback.
I'm excited about this because in the intervening years, Candace Bergen did not turn into a Pizzagate supporting nut.
Right. So we got Roseanne, who is a Pizzagate fucking nut. And... if you guys want to know our opinion on that show, you can go back a couple episodes.
It's on record.
I'm pretty sure Les rails on it. Pretty good. But Murphy Brown is going to make a return and talk about a character and an actress as well who really took a stand in politics for a progressive movement. And it was edgy that she would be she would have a kid without a father.
Yeah, yeah. On the show. Single mom. Career woman, middle-aged. Dan Quayle lost his shit.
Yeah, and then she was like, fuck you, Dan Quayle. Yeah. And they had, like, some whole thing. Like,
that
on
was the
show.
Best part about it was that, like, he clutched his pearls and got all in a titter about it, and she just went, suck it up. No.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, Bergen just held her ground.
So, you know, this trailer, it was done more like a sort of a mockumentary style thing. They're interviewing all the characters and they're talking about why they're coming back. And she's like, why am I returning to the news? Basically because of this asshole. And like they show a picture of Trump. So she's basically now got her new foil for material.
Well, yay, because I love having the good fight on CBS All Access, which is just the good wife if it focused almost solely on Trump.
Okay, so there you go.
And yeah.
More of that. Yeah, so something to keep an eye out for. There's a show called Happy Together, which is just Damon Wayans Jr.
Happy
multicam.
Endings 2.
It's yeah, I guess it's him and his wife. He's like an accountant for a Justin Bieber type character, and that guy has to go into hiding and ends up living with Damon Wayans Jr. and his wife at his house because he's just laying low, and he shows this uptight, nerdy little couple how to live the Bieber party life. I guess I don't know. It looked dumb.
Yeah. I am more likely, if I'm stuck in needing a dumb sitcom, I'm more likely to watch that one than the previous list of dumb sitcoms we went through.
Okay.
Just because I like Damon Wayans Jr. from Happy Endings.
I got one more for you. Last one is called The Neighborhood. And you told me an interesting anecdote about this.
Indeed.
But this is Cedric the Entertainer lives in this neighborhood, and he hates gentrification, guys. Hates it.
Don't we
and all? All of a sudden, a white family moves in next door, and it's pandemonium, and there's a laugh track. So as soon as I heard that, I was out. But
yep.
You were saying.
So there's a TV Land show called The Nobodies that is basically about three comedians who watched all their friends get famous. They're fictionalized versions of real comedians. Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone produce it, a lot of guest stars. And basically the show is about how anything can happen in a meeting of trying to get your show on. These three comedians are constantly trying to get this show on the air, and it's always mutating in meetings until they're like, well, now you're not a writer on it and you're cast out of it, but they just keep agreeing to changes and shit and
right.
getting hijacked. They started out with a show called Open Dorf Policy, and as of this week on the show, that is completely mutated into a show called Rob in the Hood, and it's gone from being like a white dude with his black in-laws moving in with him to being a white dude moving in with his black in-laws in the hood. And they changed the name of his character so they could make the pun title and shit.
And the character was Cedric the Entertainer, right?
Well, and I don't think Cedric played that character in the show, but like Cedric the Entertainer was just on Nobody's as well.
Oh, okay.
And so like I interviewed the principals from Nobody's earlier this week, and they had just read this in Deadline of like, dude, is Cedric just doing the bad show that we like came up with on our show?
That's so ridiculous.
And basically it sounds like Neighborhood is a laugh track driven fish out of water.
Yeah.
It's just really funny that like it sounds like he got offered the fucking plotline bad show from another show.
I just looked at how long we've recorded already. I forgot how long upfronts go. Whenever we do this, it's like, an extra long episode. All right, just a few more I'm going to run through. CW is doing a Charmed remake. Never watched the show before. Not going to watch it
I
now.
Like, so Javier Grillo-Marx Watch was part of the original crew off Charmed.
Oh, yeah?
And when they first announced this remake, there were a lot of people that were like all bothered that you would remake such a sacrosanct show as Charmed. And like, Javi's immediate weigh-in of like, no, if Charmed is too sacred to remake, then everything is. Like, come the fuck on.
Yeah. All American is the other CW show. It is another fish out of water, but this is a high school kid who's got great talent, but he's from the wrong side of the tracks, and he gets recruited to go to Beverly Hills High School to play, and he's, you know, conflict with him.
So, like, he's from West Philadelphia, born and raised, right?
Yeah.
And on the playground is where he'd spent, like, most of his days, though. Just chilling out.
Chilling out, Max.
Yeah, relaxing was, all cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
throwing some
this.
Football outside of school. Yeah, I don't know. that's ridiculous. It might be okay. It looked a little bit better than the Charmed one to me. Two shows that I did think also did look really cool. Over on Sci-Fi, Night Flyers, the new George R. R. Martin adaptation, which is described as Psycho in Space.
Yes.
Which reminds me of like Event Horizon or something.
I don't know a whole lot about this show, except that it's been rumored as in the works for a while.
Yeah. We only get this little teaser, which is basically a couple different characters while an alarm's going off, like standing in the hallways of a space shuttle out in space.
Kind of sounds like Helix.
Yeah, so I'm like, you don't know really what's going to be happening. The other one that's interesting is this one called Deadly Class, which is an adaptation of a comic book series, and the Russo brothers are helping to produce this.
Okay.
You know, and those guys are coming off of a pretty big movie called Avengers.
Yes.
Infinity War.
And a pretty great show called Community.
That's right. And so this is takes place in the 80s, and it's a bunch of kids that have been recruited to attend a school for assassins. Yeah.
Okay.
And it looks really awesome. The period works great for it. It's kind of got this British punk vibe going on as well. And there are ninjas on motorcycles. And yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah. I mean, this sounds like the kind of stuff that I loved about Kingsman.
Yeah.
And I like Spy School stuff or Red Sparrow-ish stuff.
I would say this was easily the one I was most excited for, is Deadly Class. Maybe Night Flyers, but I just didn't see much of it, so I don't know.
I'm going to withhold. George R. R. Martin is, I'm in the minority on this, but it's not an immediate sell for me.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, especially him nowadays.
I don't know.
All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back to talk a little bit about HBO. Guys, HBO has been wrapping up two of its comedies this week, and this was pretty unexpected, I think, to the both of us.
I had no idea that the Silicon Valley season was this short.
Yeah.
Is it 8 episodes?
It's only 8 episodes this season.
When I've complained about this out loud, and I realize that everybody who runs television just sits by, you know, the speaker and, like, waits to hear what I'll say.
Right.
But when I was saying shorten the seasons, I was talking specifically to Netflix about Marvel shows.
Oh, please, yes.
And not about Silicon Valley, God damn it.
Yeah, I don't understand why they would, except for maybe, you know, without T.J. Miller, how can they sustain? Just kidding. This season was great without T.J. Miller.
Honestly, I didn't miss Ehrlich at all.
Did not need him.
I loved getting Jin Yang arcing up. If anything, Jin Yang could have been in even more of the season.
Yeah, he's a foil, but he's kind of lurking in the background. And, you know, they give the guys, the Pied Piper crew, some victories this season.
Yes, I was very happy with that it wraps up. There was a moment where I thought, are they about to pull the rug out from under right at the very end?
Yeah. I mean, they did that whole big buildup of, like, oh, Richard Hendricks fucked everyone over again, and if that guy had only known that he should be nice to the video game guy.
Yeah.
But, like, why should he? That guy screwed him over. And, like, his...
Yeah. And I like that Richard does... he doesn't learn that lesson in the moment, which would be unbelievable for his character, frankly.
Right.
If he had just suddenly in the hallway, like, realized, oh, I need to be nicer to K-Hole Games, which I still laugh at the name of that fucking
K-Hole
company.
Yeah.
But... I loved that he instead also, or along with it, he also learns a lesson about when it is appropriate to be that kind of dick in his job.
Yeah.
Like, he keeps being a terrible person, terrible CEO, only because he's aiming this down. Like, he keeps punching down with it. Like, another guy who's basically equal to him, who's going through something he just went through, and he says, oh, you know, kiss my piss, fuck you. And... he should be doing that kind of shit to, like, Gavin and Lori and people
and
like
that.
And
then he does.
And then he does. I sat there for a moment going, is he handing him a piece of paper with fuck you on it, or is he...
One of the things I kind of was put off by this season is Kumail Nanjiani's character. I don't know why they made him much more of a cartoon. Is this, like, an absence of T.J. Miller's character that, like, they need him to... just be much more of a petulant child about everything all the time?
They weirdly humanized Guilfoyle.
Yeah.
Like, Guilfoyle at the end of this season actually looks over at Monica and is like, I like you as a friend. I mean, like I view you as an acceptable human, kind of.
Yeah.
Which is an outrageous personal growth for Guilfoyle.
It is. As well as, like, him working to save the company, him being competent in everything that he does.
Yeah. He's like, a badass. And Kumail... not Kumail, but
I can't remember his character's name.
Yeah, his character Dinesh. Though they do show him do some competent coding at times, they then parlay it into, like, two episodes of him being a buffoon. I mean, he really is just a near complete fuck up.
And
the whole Tesla thing,
like, the product placement of Tesla was fucking annoying. So there's some problems with this show.
I also saw it got brought up this season that there's some stuff going on in Silicon Valley that, I mean, in real, not the show, but like in this industry that they could have touched on or could have brought up.
And they didn't
go there with the plot line. Mm. It's a sitcom. I get them picking and choosing like what ripped from the headlines battles to put to pull. I kind of thought it was fun that they went for Chinese trade copyright ripoff at all. An intellectual property ripoff at all. I thought that was kind of funny. But I don't know. I really, really didn't expect it to be 8 episodes.
The ending also went a little bit Entourage with the big win. It's like, oh, now we're big ballers and look at our office. And I'm like, all right, you guys can tone it down a little.
Yeah, I do continue to love Jared. That comedian,
sadist,
that dude is fucking hysterical. I don't know if he improvs half of that or what, but holy shit, that kid cracks me up. This season, particularly watching him, I've always enjoyed the fact that he's ridiculously competent.
Yeah,
I mean he could single handedly run this company other than the code, but if they would just leave Jared in charge, except that he would never be in charge.
He doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to, adamantly.
He's
his continued breaking of the new assistant got dark.
Yeah.
Got weird.
I don't like where they resolved it with the kid just becoming an annoying party bro.
I really didn't like where they left that kid.
I wish they would have had it where he was just this empty shell. And he moved about doing everything. But him standing on a table and going, woo, I'm like, no, that's actually not the type of assistant that Richard would even appreciate.
I feel like Jared would tear into that dude for being that loud and creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was weird. I feel like they took it to a strange place. I liked what they were doing. I liked the idea of Jared chipped away everything that wasn't his assistant. And that's
what's left. They wussed out on that last call of where do we take him?
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen him try to make another Jared.
Right.
Where he gets renamed. No, this isn't your name anymore. Because that kid's got a law degree. And it would be great to, if...
And Jared goes into his back history that's this weird Nazi something or other.
Which
going
in a previous season, I think the first time Richard ever has to share a room with Jared, he's on bunk beds and Jared screams German. And then so you speak German? No.
What are you talking about?
But you do. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything about his backstory.
Yeah, so, I really enjoyed the season for the most part. There's a couple flaws that I think we already pointed out.
Yeah, I'm not as happy with it as previous seasons, maybe, but it's hard to judge. If you liked any of Silicon Valley, I feel like it's still going pretty well.
Right. What I do need to recommend you go watch ASAP, Les, is Barry.
That's the Obama...
Yeah, it's about Obama as a kid. Yeah,
I saw the first episode of it. It was awesome. I'm way behind on Barry.
The show,
or first two maybe,
really kind of toggles between. Oh, is this a comedy? It's in a half hour format, and it's Bill Hader, who you're used to seeing in a comedy, but no, it's actually just kind of an intense drama that has a little bit of light humor peppered in, and it's a little bit surreal. Anyone who hasn't watched this show is Bill Hader as this. Post Iraq War, Afghanistan or Iraq, and he's a vet who's got some PTSD issues, and he's also a hitman.
Yeah, special set of skills,
but he's kind of emotionally dead, and he gets a chance to go on a hit in L.A. and stumbles into an acting group, and decides oh wait. This is something I really want to do. He finds people that he identifies with, and this hitman who has hit all of his emotions is suddenly having this outlet.
And he's
to
not
express
at
them.
Least in the first episode. He's not just not good in the acting class. It's spectacularly hysterically bad.
Oh, he's terrible.
And which is great. I mean, it's like watching someone.
I'm not sure he really improves much through the season.
Yeah, watching him act like that was like watching somebody do their own accent badly.
Mm.
Like watching Hugh Laurie do an American accent doing a shitty British accent. Like watching Bill Hader fake bad act is hysterical to me. And I think it's Henry Winkler. It's the Fonz that he's taking classes.
Oh man.
From.
Henry Winkler is incredible in this show. He steals the scene every time. Him and this guy who's called NoHo Hank and North Hollywood Hank.
Okay.
He's this Chechen mafia, like, right-hand man. And he's hairless. He's the guy who's bald and doesn't have eyebrows. And he's like, oh, I'm Noho Hank. Hey, guys.
Yes, Anthony Carrigan.
That guy and Henry Winkler are fantastic in the show. The show ends up taking a pretty dramatic, dark turn as it evolves. And it's just one of those shows that doesn't pull punches. And it starts off as this one show you kind of think you're anticipating in the first couple episodes. And it's like, oh, wait, no, guys. When we said this guy's a hitman, it means that we're going to deal with some heavy murdering people shit here. And it's not going to be the lighthearted comedy stuff only. And so, fuck, it gets intense. And I won't say much more, but it's only 8 episodes. They're all half hour, and it watches so quickly, and you guys are going
to
love it.
Yeah, I'll have to tear through the rest of it.
Yeah, it's so worth it. Let's jump over to Westworld, which just had its 4th episode. Title is The Riddle of the Sphinx. And you know what? A lot of people have been complaining about Westworld this season. I'm not sure if it's more than last season.
I did the same. I can't tell. I have a hard time telling if these are fair judgments about it. A lot of people complained last season about the show being like willfully obtuse and convoluted just to fuck with you. And I found that baffling because I distinctly didn't get that feeling from Westworld. There's an awful lot of shows that I feel like you are purposely structuring this to screw with me. And then there's shows that feel like you're playing within the acceptable bounds of how much you can screw with the format.
Yeah.
Without it being like a total Agatha Christie-like reveal.
It does feel like it served a purpose in the first season, like almost like a necessity that they were jumping between timelines and worlds because that's how that story needed to unravel. But watching this season and watching how time shifts constantly with Bernard, I'm wondering if they felt like that was a necessary aspect of the first season that they somehow need to try and mimic in this season.
I wonder if they do feel like it's part of their style.
Yeah.
Now. Like it's part of what makes, like, this is Westworld style storytelling.
Yeah, it's got to jump around and it's got to leave you a little bit confused on what time period you're watching at.
I feel like partly, at least in the first season, I felt like that was partly a there were larger lessons or larger things about the world to teach the audience.
Yeah.
That rather than have a character come out and say something like, I've been coming to the Westworld Park for 20 years and it's weird to me that the robots always look the same. Instead, over the course of the season, you just slowly, it clicks for you. Holy fuck, I think I'm watching 3 timelines because the robots don't age.
Yeah.
And so, like, maybe this is Dolores across 4 decades.
Mm.
And Dolores just always looks the same. And I liked that there were certain facets about the show that I felt like they were having to drive it home really thoroughly across the first season in a way that was a little bit slow burn and annoying sometimes. But so that by the end of the season, I really understood so that when season 2 started to be on the lookout for, like, what time am I in?
Right.
And to mark who's human by what's happening.
Like who's in proximity. Yeah.
So that they can tell a slightly more complicated story than they could get away with because they've taught me to look for these things.
What I'm very fascinated with in this second season is that they didn't just kind of rest on the basic premise of the first season of, like, there's this one theme park. They are asking those more complex questions that would naturally have evolved out of being able to make robots that are able to mimic people.
Yeah.
And so now they're looking at the quest for immortality in humans, taking the human conscious and putting it inside of a robot.
Yeah, so you knew they were going to freejack this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, last episode, as soon as you saw the guy, the original Delos head cough, and like, well, some of us have more time than others. Like, it clicked like, well, duh, of course you would fucking do this. You'd be looking for a way to move consciousness into theirs. The drone hosts and what, I mean, obviously this place is not just a fucking theme park where rich people can have sex. We already know in a very ripped from the headlines kind of way, oh my God, they're scouring marketing data off you.
In this episode, you know, I know that you haven't seen it less, so I'm not going to try and go into too much spoiler because you do really enjoy this show.
Yeah.
But in this episode, we do have a very interesting ongoing sequence with the lead old dude, Australian Delos guy, mm-hmm. who's like financing this. And it's almost, it has very strong echoes of Lost and the
Charles
Hatch.
Whitmore? Or,
oh. Well, more like The Hatch. And okay. It's like, they do some fun, curious stuff. And like, man, I'm just always impressed by the set design. Like, they lovingly, like, cross the set where he's hanging out in this one room where he's working through some situations with, what's the young guy's name?
Jimmy Simpson?
Jimmy Simpson's character. Yeah, his son-in-law.
So, young William, yeah.
Yeah, young William. And, yeah, I loved the sequence that they do with him there. And, you know, we also get Bernard, once again, jumping back and forth in time and revealing more of these demons of the person that he was under the control of Robert Ford and, like, some of the actions he was doing in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And since, like, you know, this park is now opened up in, like, the last
episode.
There's
a sea that shouldn't be there and...
Yeah. But also, like, we've seen, like, a little glimpse of the other world.
Yeah,
right?
We've seen the Raj. We've seen a bit of Shogun World.
Yeah, so we've seen the Raj. Yeah, they do a little bit more hint of the Shogun World. And it's I'm loving how they're just kind of taking bits and pieces and expanding it. I'm wondering, though, how necessary it is. And I don't know yet because we haven't gotten to the end of the season. How necessary it is that Bernard is this unreliable narrator who's kind of losing time and jumping back and forward through it. We get a lot better example of that in this episode where he even recognizes that he's out of the time loop and he's a passive observer in one of his previous memories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the first times I've seen that where he goes, oh, you're not actually here. I'm just trapped in this memory of
so
what happened.
The same way that I feel like they were slowly like teaching a thorough lesson about how these robots don't age and to watch your timelines in the first season, I feel like now this season they're taking that a step further and reminding us constantly with Bernard that because of the way they handle memories, that
everything is in the present in a way?
Yes, for them. So, because they Felix says that to
they have perfect recall.
Maeve, in the first season, that like she's like, "What the fuck just happened? Where was I?" And like, okay, well, my memories are fuzzy, and it's part of how I know they're in the past. Your memories are so crisp that if you slip into a memory, it's like a fugue state, and you're there. And so, like in the first season, there's a moment where you realize, shit, I should be watching for three timelines, but you still are assuming when you jump to a timeline that you are watching those people experience those actions in their present moment.
Yeah.
I feel like in season two now, they're drilling home that same kind of thorough lesson, but with the reminder that those timelines can all just be memories. And
that's what we're seeing. And now we're seeing that like sometimes he can't even interact with his memory because
so, like,
his mind
you think
is trapped
you're in
the present
moment, but you're actually watching a movie of the present moment. And that would be the moment where you realize, fuck, how long ago was this memory? What's really happening right now? Yeah.
That's what keeps happening with him.
And I feel like if they had done that in the first few episodes of the first season, I wouldn't even have the language to fucking follow it and figure out what's going on.
Right.
And that stuff like that, I realize is part of what's going to make people like pull their hair out and go, fuck Westworld. This is being needlessly obtuse. But I really feel like this has to have been a conversation in the writer's room where they went, how complicated can we get? How fast? And what do we have to do every single episode to a character to make sure that the audience stays mindful of this fact?
This is a show that, you know, isn't going to hand things out simply to you. You have to do your homework mm-hmm. for this show. And I love and appreciate that. I'm also just nervous that HBO has really backed this horse, pun intended. And
yeah,
I'm now a little bit worried just because I hear it from so many people who I even thought were like big viewers of this show that like, this is too much. It's hard for me to get into. It's too convoluted at this point.
I do worry that I'm going to end up carnivaled on this and that HBO is just not going to be able to back it, that there will be a to reach back on Silicon Valley, there'll be a 51% moment where more than enough people will not care about how interesting this is for long enough to get to where
it's so brilliant.
Go.
It needs to, like, It's like all those concepts that happened in Dollhouse that you're like, please explore that, and they never did.
Yeah, well, and there was a moment watching Dollhouse where you realize like, ah, fuck, this show has a ceiling where you're not going to explore these concepts to the high.
Like they even talked about in Dollhouse that they were trapped in doing the formulaic thing for at least the first half of the season because they wouldn't let them do the show unless they had some sort of rhythm there.
Whereas Westworld is HBO backing the higher concepts from these same writers coming off of Person of Interest. And, I mean, Jonathan Nolan did that as well. I really, really hope that people will take a deep breath, realize they can wait a minute and binge watch this if they need to. And please stick with Westworld. I'm loving the fuck out of this show.
If you guys are having trouble following it, please go to like Reddit.com/r/Westworld and like follow some of those threads where people are like starting to explain things.
I hate Facebook, but I am willing to engage. If people just want to ask for Westworld to be pedantically explained to them, I will be a dick and totally. I mean, I will be really nice and explain Westworld politely.
Hit up Les on Twitter with all your Westworld questions. He will answer them.
That could go really wrong.
Question time. If you guys like us on Facebook.com/TV Dudes, once a week we put up a little post and you guys can ask us whatever you would like. First question comes to us from our fearless leader, Mike Moody of Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater.
He says, y'all like that, Barry? Yeah, I do. And Les is going to watch it. You should listen to the previous segment. I don't know why you jumped all the way over to questions.
Hi, what the fuck, man?
Listen to this episode linearly, Mike. Jeez. All right, Jonathan Huffnagel says, dear TV Dudes, recently, I've been on a nostalgia binge, trying to see what cartoons hold up or not, and which have at least some value. While some good shows like Cyber Six have aged like a fine wine, Beast Wars has aged like a warm beer. I remember being better by the end half, though I've committed to watching the whole thing, and I hope my nostalgia memory does not let me down.
I'm old. Beast Wars is a Transformer cartoon that started after what I would consider...
Yeah.
Nostalgic Transformers.
Jonathan Huffnagel's younger than us. Yeah. What cartoons did you love but now fear to watch for risk of contaminating your happy memories? What cartoons did you rewatch that let you down and which held up despite some aspects not aging well? Also, what are some more obscure cartoons you have nostalgia for that may not be well known or remembered by most others? Cartoons, Les. I was a huge He-Man fan.
Yeah, and actually, He-Man's still kind of fun. She-Ra's even more fun. They're both on Netflix, I think.
Oh, I feel like I tried to watch a He-Man episode. I'm like, oh, man.
They're just weird.
This is a toy commercial.
It is totally a toy commercial, but it's also just stranger than I remember.
I tried to watch the old X-Men cartoons that were on
like
Fox.
Like the 90s ones?
Yeah, the 90s ones. Those and Spider-Man. And one time
I hated the animation of those in the 90s.
I got high and watched it, and I was like, I don't remember this episode being so choppy. Why is the animation so bad? But that's because we've evolved since then. Well, animation's great.
X-Men Evolution looked better, but wasn't the X-Men comic plot lines I liked.
Was that the one Wolverine and the X-Men was good.
Wolverine and the X-Men was good. Yeah. I liked it. And X-Men Evolution looks real similar to it. It has that Jackie Chan Adventures kind of animation style.
Right.
As far as like older cartoons that I've gone back and watched, Dungeons and Dragons still holds up for me.
Yeah.
I still like that cartoon. Galaxy High.
Oh, man, Galaxy High. If there's one I would recommend, it's an obscure cartoon to go check out, Galaxy High. I think you can look it up on YouTube.
There's several episodes on YouTube. Kid Video is also on YouTube.
I've never heard of Kid Video.
Kid Video is fucking terrible, and I love it. It's a band that was put together specifically for this cartoon, I think, and they get pulled like an AHA video style. Like they get pulled into like a mirror, into like a Mojoverse, basically.
Okay.
And there's this guy, Master Blaster, that kidnaps musicians from our world, pulls them into his world, and
Master Blaster.
Yep. And steals their music. So, like, in the first episode, it's like a Lionel Richie song and something else. But, like, every episode, basically, like, there's like cover songs. And it was absolutely weird. Ran in the early 80s. And those are on YouTube as well.
This is more of a game show, but there was one where these kids would compete for Nintendo games. And at the end, I remember they would wear a Velcro suit and get to run down like Blockbuster-esque aisles of games.
I remember
and
that.
Take the games and stick them to their yes. clothes. And I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
I could win the fuck out of that. Yes.
I would love to do that.
I remember that. It's like Supermarket Sweep, but for, yeah, video games.
You remember going to Blockbuster and just getting video games?
One more. I kind of want to go to Alaska to go to a Blockbuster. That's the level of nerd. Hiking.
All right, next question comes to us from Javier Mancilla, who says, hey dudes, simple question. What are your thoughts on Legion so far, and if you guys have kept up with Atlanta? Legion this season for me has been one of those that at first doesn't go down entirely well. It comes off very obtuse, but after rewatching these past few episodes, it's been magnificent. The most recent episode with the multiple Davids was outstanding. And Atlanta has been fantastic with the Oktoberfest episode, the Barber episode, and the Out of the World Teddy Perkins episode being standouts. Thanks, dudes, and keep on keeping on.
I am way behind on both those because they are... They have found themselves on the channels that I just can't watch without some actual pain in my ass.
Okay, I need to hook you up with that.
Yeah, because stuff that's on just cable, like if they're just going to be dicks and not be on Hulu or Netflix or...
I thought I gave you access.
It doesn't work. It keeps booting me out.
I'll have to double check it. I have caught up with Atlanta. Oh, man. I'm going to mess up his name. Brian Henry...
Tyree Henry. Henry Tyree?
Tyree. Anyway, Paperboy. He is so fantastic this season. And there's the episode where he gets jumped by these kids and goes Brian Tyree Henry. He goes running through the woods, and it is such a great episode. He's so amazing in this season. And I mean, all the cast is so great. And I can't believe
the show that introduced me to Lakeith Stanfield.
Yeah,
I will love that actor for the rest of his fucking career. I mean, that guy has so much goodwill to burn right now with me.
This young up and coming Donald Glover seems to be pretty good.
Yes, I was actually
taking over the world
today. He's playing ACL Fest this year.
Yeah.
And the last time I went to ACL Fest, nobody knew who the fuck Childish Gambino was.
Yeah, I'm going this year, so I'm gonna check that out. Legion is another show like Westworld that's very cerebral and. And it's super surreal, that one. And I enjoy it, but it's one of those that I need to watch a couple episodes in a row. I need to, like, take a break and then binge through a bunch. I can't just, like, go week to week because I feel like it's I need to be in a mindset for the mind fuck that's going on.
So the fucked up Adult Swim thing I was telling you about earlier,
yeah.
I got to interview Brian Husky about the sequel to Mr. Neighbor's House that's coming out. It reminded me of like if Legion were like a sitcom, like if Legion were going to be like a Too Many Cook or Eight Is Enough,
okay.
Like, or something like that, like where I was watching it going, like we were saying about Westworld, I was watching it going, you can walk this comedy this far out onto this ledge because I've seen Legion.
Yeah.
And so I have some language for the level of mental illness that you're describing here. Because it really does it felt more than anything like season one of Legion very much prepared me to watch this fucked up Adult Swim thing that's coming out. So I'm looking forward to catching up on Legion.
Yeah,
but I can
yeah.
definitely believe that it's a mind fuck that's obtuse.
We're gonna fix this as soon as we're done with this episode. You're gonna have access.
Sweet.
Kobe Clark says, "Hey dudes, I just want to get your thoughts on Fox's excuse for canceling Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Basically, they said the show cast and creators were so great." That because of football, they didn't have a great spot to air it, so they canceled it. That's like buying a brand new 4K TV, but you don't have the perfect wall to mount it on, so you just set it on fire in the driveway.
No, I mean, I love you, and I have to break up with you because you're just so hot and sexy and awesome. Like, if you're just, you're too good to me.
Right.
Like, I mean, I'm sorry, but that is a total, like, it's not you, it's me bullshit excuse to break up with a fucking show. Like,
yeah, that's... own up to whatever it was. Didn't like they have some bad relationship with someone.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it seemed like they were happy that NBC did pick it up.
Yeah, because it just seems odd that. I mean, that almost seems so mealy-mouthed as to be like, are you guys afraid of the fans, but you don't like the show, but you're still going to break, like, you're still going to cancel it, but you don't want to insult the fans by saying that you don't like it?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Bullshit.
Yeah, I'm calling bullshit on that.
Jonathan After Michael says, hi, dudes. Do you think that the police procedurals have an influence on people's perceptions of the police?
Yes.
Seeing many shows of detectives and officers pushing the limits of the law to get the bad guy.
Oh, and those fucking rat squad motherfuckers from internal affairs that are always coming down on good cops that are just trying to... I mean, they know that guy did it.
Man, fucking IA, lay off.
Dude, every...
Because that guy needs to get that gangbanger.
There's tons of scholarly articles and shit about how IA is always shown as the, like, stepping on the neck of this good cop that's trying to get it done. Like it fucks up perspective on, it's part of why I love Nathan Fillion, and I'll stop short of saying that The Rookie is like an out and out bad idea.
Yeah.
But it's a fucking bad idea. Like shows like that.
It seems pretty tone deaf.
Yeah. And I feel like shows like that inadvertently have an agenda about trying to sell me on the idea that, cops are just officer friendly if you just understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. It's some bullshit. We're with you on this,
so
Jonathan.
Yes, I think it does.
Yeah. Alec Miracle says, dudes, I just finished 6 Feet Under. Holy crap.
Oh, man.
As you already have been told, I don't binge, and I'm glad I didn't because I've absorbed this beautiful show for 2 years, taking my time with every death.
I want to know what his programming schedule is. If he's not binging, like, I assume that there's like a chart in his house, like a chore chart of like the greatest television schedule that's ever been made. Like one really sweet channel that dude watches, right?
Must go watch only one episode. Must have this piecemeal. Man, that's just like two depressing years then, dude, to do that. Fuck. Man, that show messed me up. I binged that over like a week. And I remember just being sad for like a month after. Anyway, he says... I even remembered every single name that appears in the white background on the screen. Just kidding. Can you imagine?
Oh, shit.
I don't know if it will surpass The Sopranos as my number 5 series of all time, but wow, I'm still in shock. Anyways, no question. I just thought I'd share that with you guys.
It surpassed Sopranos for me. I love 6 Feet Under.
Yeah. Sopranos has some problems with a couple seasons, especially those last few.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
6 Feet Under never had a full drag season for me that just slowed down.
Not at all. Stephen Young says, hey, TV dudes, with Rick and Morty renewed for 70 more episodes. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. 70 more fucking episodes.
I really don't know if that's a good idea or not. Like, Dan Harmon and Roiland on Reputation don't seem like the guys that you can hand 70 episodes to and expect to get all 70 of those back.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're going to get 15 of these, and they're going to say, fuck it, break the contract, pay it, and walk away, and then maybe do 30 more.
The rest is going in their nose. Nose candy.
Just because they got signed to this, I don't believe there will be 70 more of these.
He says, how do you think this will affect the already toxic fan community? Are they going to increase, or is there somehow they're going to fade away?
A part of me kind of hopes that it pushes it to like a fandom Thunderdome, and like half of the Rick and Morty fans kill half the Rick and Morty fans, and that like 15 people get left to watch these 70 episodes.
We can dream.
Yeah. Like, I really hope it just overcranks it to a burst level, or having been signed to these now, that they wait so long to produce them that by the time they start coming out, there's no Rick and Morty fan base anymore, and that they just produce these for like nobody.
I would love if they have this like automated, that they'll release one episode a year for the next 70 years.
That would be amazing. Yeah, do it like a lottery payout.
He also says that, also, when I became a patron, it said Randy would come to my house and wash my car. So when are you coming to Australia, Randy? Which I forgot. We might have actually put that bullshit in our Patreon early on. We were like, what is this, like, you can put whatever bullshit awards on here?
Right.
I hope I removed it since then.
A lot more people are going to have to donate, but we can make this happen.
Yeah, I feel like Randy should go wash your car either way.
Yes.
I wish he was here to hear this and be put on the spot.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Last question comes to us from Kyle Volta, who says, hey, TV dudes, what would you say the various networks were best at? For example, Sci-Fi is best at getting rid of actually good science fiction shows in favor of lame B movies where the joke was tired after the first installment.
It's true. It's true. They are good at that.
ABC is good at wholesome family comedy?
Yes. So if you could take a funny show and then just sand all the edges down until it's not funny.
Right.
Then that's an ABC show. Yeah. CBS can do the shit out of a week-by-week procedural.
Oh, man.
Where they solve cases that you didn't care about.
Your grandparents will love it, though.
Yes.
Fox will do a great job of putting out some crazy new edgy shows that you're like so excited are gonna be out there, and then they're gonna cancel them season in.
And the 8 episodes that they do air, they will air out of order.
Yeah.
Especially, and actually the more out of order it is, probably the more arc plot dependent it was.
CW is fantastic at making you think, man, teenagers are fucked up.
Yes. Yeah. The CW is absolutely fantastic at trashy high school.
Yeah.
Freeform is fantastic at trashy first jobs. So like if you've graduated high school but you got your first dream job, then that's some Freeform.
FX and HBO are fantastic.
Period. Yes.
I think we're just going to end it there. Man, those ones, they just make gold. Hey, go watch Westworld, guys, and don't complain about it.
The Paramount Network? No.
That exists?
They're fantastic at marketing. No.
Oh, man. all right, Les, thanks, man. This was fun. And, you know, despite me coughing every, like, 20 minutes or 5 minutes, this was a good chat. And I'm glad we got to discuss some of these upfronts, even though a lot of them look really terrible.
Yes, it appears there will be a lot of television canceled next year.
You have homework. You have to go watch Barry.
I do.
And some FX shows.
I do.
Yeah. All right, guys, we are going to wrap things up there. Thank you guys, as always, for your support. Thanks for the great questions, you guys. And thanks for tuning in. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.